Hello everyone, welcome to this new podcast, Luxury Insight, in partnership with fashionnetwork.com. Today we are happy to have Ulrich Gardedu with us, who's CEO of Marc Ross. Ulrich will share with us what it is to manage a 175-year-old brand, which is actually one of the oldest America's luxury brands. So have a nice discovery and good podcast.
Good morning, everyone. We're here talking to Ulrich Gardedu, who is a true luxury man. He's had a very long and distinguished career working for brands such as Burberry, Celine, George Jensen, Temperley, and then Waterford Wedgwood brand, which is partly from where I'm from, Ireland. I'm Godfrey Deeney, and I'm delighted to welcome you, Ulrich.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about you, how you became a luxury person, your first steps, and a little bit about your career, and then we'll focus on some of the elements.
Terrific. So thrilled to be here. My luxury career really started, I would say, when I grew up in Denmark. And my parents had a very articulated and specific style and interest in beautiful objects and having an elevated quality of life. And I got kind of fascinated by that, specifically also from a professional point of view, when I went to Paris and I was working for the Danish Foreign Ministry at the embassy there. And I walked down Avenue Montaigne and saw these incredible fashion houses and met some very interesting people who I found had a good balance using part of their right brain and their left side brain and making, you know, true business happen within a creative world. And that's how it started, and I was lucky to get in with LVMH and be with Celine for 7 years.
Did you go to a university or a school to study?
I studied business.
You did?
General business, yeah.
And then your first steps was in Celine?
Celine with LVMH, based out of Paris, then running their Asia operation based out of Japan, and then ending up in North America and opening the Celine office there.
Okay, and what did you do next after that?
Then I had a quick stint back in Paris for Cerruti.
Yeah.
And then I call her my mentor in my professional career, Rosemary Bravo,
yes,
who I had met at the time, who was running Saks Fifth Avenue, called me and said that she was moving to London and joining Burberry. And my initial reaction was, are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
And she said, well, let's discuss this because we're going to do something that Gucci has done, but even bigger. And that was a great start of 10 years with Burberry, which was really the turnaround of classic traditional raincoat manufacturer and turning it into a true luxury lifestyle brand.
But you sensed from the beginning that her vision had potential after your initial reaction.
Absolutely, and a lot of the things that I'd been living through at Celine, which was just at the time bought by Bernard Arnault,
yeah,
and which was a true turnaround also from her, the original owner, Madame Celine.
Yeah.
There were quite a few similarities in where Burberry was and what was needed to be done.
You've gone back and forth a bit between Europe and America, you've ended up now back in the United States running maybe the oldest, one of the oldest luxury brands in America.
Absolutely. We're turning 175 years old this year,
yeah,
2020.
Yeah.
And I can't think of any and have been looking up, you know, trying to find what are the true heritage luxury brands there are out of America. And, you know, apart from some beautiful jewelry companies like Tiffany, Harry Winston, etc., I can't see any true heritage luxury accessory brand with so deep American roots as we have with the age of being 175.
Tell me a bit about the beginning, about Marc Ross, you know, the very early days, and define a bit its DNA.
So the company was founded in Boston.
Yeah.
And it really, as would at the time happen, it was really saddlery and all kind of leather accessories for the horses and for transportation. That then at the beginning of last century turned into the general transportation where you needed lockets and trunks and to cross the Atlantics and to go around in with the whole automobile era. Mm-mm. And then it turned into more of a lifestyle leather-based luxury brand mid of last century.
What lessons that you did you learn at both Celine and Burberry, which you're trying to apply to Marcrans?
I have kind of developed, let's call it a toolbox, to go in and try and assess with deep respect of the DNA of a heritage brand, but then assess what is it that you can use of that DNA and bring it to life and to especially relevance of today's consumer. And I think that's the trick, is to understand what is it the consumer out there wants today, and what is it that emotionally can connect them with this particular heritage brand that I've been working for.
Okay.
Dangerous, I think, sometimes is to become too storytelling in a museum-like way, but understanding how to do it in an aspirational way that really attracts the customer out there.
It was a monsieur, Mr. Marcrans, who launched the brand. And then how did it change hands?
Then the company was, in its early days, sold to Patrick Murphy, who did a fantastic job in really putting Marcrans on the map, not only in the US, but also internationally, with a lot of business made out of, especially England, also from a manufacturing point of view.
Yeah.
And his son, Gerald Murphy, and Sarah Murphy, was to inherit the brand. And
at the beginning of the last century, sort of.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that was, as you recognize the name, really an amazing couple at the time. And I would say they were heading up the Lost Generation when they moved to Paris in the beginning of the 20s. And was this very intriguing, intellectual, yet with a bohemian, sophisticated lifestyle. Both artists themselves, but also surrounding themselves with the biggest talents of the time, like Picasso, Fitzgerald, Raymond, etc. So a very interesting couple, and a couple that was setting the tone of Americans in Europe, especially in this case Paris, and then later Côte d'Azur, where they established themselves.
Of course, they were the people that's often said that invented the modern idea of tanning 120 years ago, who been the first Americans who lived on the beach all year round and cared about the body beautiful. And of course, as we discussed, they were the inspiration to F. Scott Fitzgerald's novel, Tenders and Out. How do you see, though, that lifestyle, that DNA, that example fitting with the Marcrans of today?
I think the 20s and the 30s and their lifestyle, and you also see it in Gatsby to a certain extent, was an incredible, inspiring period that a lot of people today, also young people, aspire to. Because people had fun, they were surrounded by interesting people, there were depth in what people were doing. And then I think the time factor of how they took the time to have pleasure in life was very important, especially in this digital era we are living in. But what we are doing is we are saying, as Gerald and Sarah Murphy were supporting young artists and really dedicated their life to that, so are we doing today. So we have started an artist in residence program where we, in our new flagship store on Madison Avenue, really have made an experiential retail environment, which is more like a gallery than, you know, classic luxury shop. We invite in artists that we work with, also young upcoming artists, to allow them to show their work in this beautiful space, and in some cases also work on some limited edition Marcrans products.
Tell me about product development, at Marcrans. What does it include, and what have you been developing?
So when I joined a little more than a year ago, we were very much focusing on women's accessories. Our vision and our strategic roadmap today say that there's no reason that we can't turn Marcrans into a global lifestyle brand, with roots, of course, deeply in the American, with our American heritage. So we're launching new product categories. I'm very excited when we in June will launch our first real men's collections. Mark Cross originally was more actually a men's accessory brand than a women's. So we are completely reviewing the men's needs of today within accessories with, you know, strong quality and a good price ratio, but also with the functionality element that guys with mobile offices needs.
Yes.
And we think we have a big opportunity there.
So how will you launch it?
We're launching it with a couple of designers that we have been working with we can announce very shortly.
Okay.
And they are working in the laboratory at the moment to create some really exciting products that it will be a very focused collection, but it will be a collection that we launch both in leather but also in other materials like jacquard and canvas, to make sure that we have a commercially stretched pyramid that caters to many different type of customers.
How will you unveil it to the trade, in New York or in Europe?
We're launching it in New York, but as well in pop-up statements.
Yeah, you are.
With Selfridges in London.
Good.
Lane Crawford, both in Hong Kong and in mainland China.
Oh, okay.
And Shinsegae Boon in Korea.
And when will they open, in the fall?
Yeah. This over the summer and
this, and you show it to the trade in the summer somewhere in
we show it during New York Fashion Week as well as Paris Fashion Week.
Okay, very good. Men's.
Yeah.
Okay. Why? So you talked a bit about your goals for the house. I'm pardon my ignorance. Who is the owner of Mark Cross?
So the brand was acquired by GF Capital.
Oh, okay.
Which is an American equity fund. Mm. Just 2 years ago, and they have a portfolio of different brands.
Like?
GF Capital just acquired last August Mansour Gabriel.
Ah, okay.
We have a stake in Oscar de la Renta. So the idea is to have a portfolio of brands, and we work very closely together. I'm also an advisor to GF Capital. Mm. And I'm always looking for new opportunities.
What sort of business is Mark Cross? I mean, in how many stores or how many sales points worldwide?
So as you may know, it is a true revival, because Mark Cross was literally put to sleep back in the 90s when Sara Lee and the Coach Group acquired the brand, and they decided to focus on Coach and the development of folks. And so at that time, I think we had about 23 stores alone in the U.S., which were closed. So this is really a full revival of Sleeping Beauty. So the first flagship store we opened was in November on Madison Avenue.
Well, where is it on Madison?
It's on 61st and between 61st and 60th.
Oh, the Gold Coast of international retailing.
Exactly.
So you put down a bit of money to get in there, yeah?
Well, we are happy to be there. We think the clientele in that part of Madison today is really very strong, not only domestically, but also internationally.
Okay. That's the right footprint for a statement for you to make. The idea is eventually you'd slowly but surely roll out flagships, is that ultimately? Yeah?
Absolutely. My point of view, though, is we don't necessarily need to sign up, you know, for 10-year leases in such a important moving market, fast moving. So we are tending very much, as we're doing with the men's launch, to look at pop-up opportunities, to test different markets, and to see the appetite and whether we should have more permanent established retail environments.
We're at a funny stage in the luxury industry that people all feel that the market's changing, that the size of the global footprint of square feet of all luxury stores is, the growth is slowed down. It's arguably static now, and yet nonetheless, the big luxury brands still very clearly believe in their flagship stores and their maison and their concept stores, and many of them have been very slow to go into digital. The percentage of sales of big French brands, Chanel, Dior, Vuitton, is quite modest. How do you see digital as a brand building exercise, or a business thing, or a bit of both for Mark Cross?
I believe a bit of both. I mean, for us, as part of our updated strategic roadmap, the whole consumer-centric and what we call digital-first initiatives has really been key, and we have executed a lot of it in 19. First of all, we have relaunched our website, reformatted it completely, and that is now aligned with the physical image and concept that we have on Madison Avenue. And I think it's key continuously to develop the key account management we have within the wholesale network, but also to have directly operated channels where we offer, you know, top-notch customer service to the consumer, and also can give them the emotional connection of in a physical environment, to touch and to get acquainted with the brand.
Are you working with any of the, you know, the big, obviously, retailers, you know, like Farfetch, you know, Net-a-Porter, Matches, any of them, or so far, or is that to come?
Very important as part of our partners, key partners, are the third-party e-commerce partners also. Yeah.
Have you started, or will you start?
We have started.
Already with some of them?
So we had a great exclusive launch with Matches last fall.
Okay.
With a new iconic grey spelt bag that we launched with them. And we worked with most of the big guys. We had a good initiative with Moda Operandi and launched a limited edition with the Brock collection. So
good.
We are working with each one of them and making sure that in parallel with that, we also have exciting limited edition and exclusive product ranges within our directly operated network.
They're very specifically, you're a little bit like, not imitating, but in the same way of thinking of pop-up opportunities, you're tailoring most of these opportunities with e-tailers to be specific things.
I think it's important to have your core collection represented with them, but also to understand how do you work with them to have exciting newness coming to the consumer.
Bernard Arnault, who, you know, the I think he became the richest man in the world. He's certainly the richest last week. He's certainly the richest in fashion. At the press conference the other night to release the results of LVMH, he was slightly pouring cold water on the whole idea of the internet, saying it's very useful in terms of image, but when he looks at all the e-tailers, they're still losing money, and he tries to avoid that, and they've made very cautious steps. Do you think other luxury brands will repeat that?
I think what Bernardo specifically was talking about was of course the link with Amazon, and how from a counterfeit point of view, it is very challenging. And I think the partnerships a brand should have with some of these e-tailers should be very direct and a true partnership. And if that is built, it can work in both ways to the benefit of both the brand as well as the e-tailer. But it needs to be managed very carefully.
How do you see the market generally luxury changing over the next 5, 10, 20 years? What do you see were the big changes you're expecting?
I'm excited about the evolution of the luxury market, very much because I see with the whole sustainability angle a real urge also for the younger luxury consumer to understand where a product is made and how it's made. And I think the longevity of a true quality luxury product is somehow becoming more and more fashionable. You know, the fast fashion phenomenon, I question more. I think there's still obviously a lot of money to be spent, but people are spending it much wiser. They're being much better educated, and with the whole digital era, obviously everything is available of information. So I think there's a great opportunity for authentic luxury brands that can tell a real story and that has the right quality price ratio in their products.
In terms of sustainability of resources, materials, what are you doing at Markcross?
So it's very important to us. It, you know, in itself, I think the great thing also about luxury products is the lifespan that a luxury product has. we just launched at Mark Kroth's with the new platform of our website, a vintage platform where we are offering to consumers to buy vintage products of Mark Kroth as well as to sell.
I saw that looking last night at it. So how do you get the products in the first place?
So I see this as a new channel and a new business opportunity for us. And here at the country to what we just talked about in, from e-tailers, I don't see a necessity. You know, why should we give that business or all of that business to third-party e-com partners like Real, etc.? Yeah. We should be able to do this ourselves. We are the ones who can authenticate products in the best way and who can also put a price tag on it. So the way we do it is go out and search ourselves and buy the most interesting products that we believe either has a great value for our archives, for our design team inspiration, or to be resold to the end consumer.
It's a big trend. Beside the hotel cost, there's now Westin Vintage. It's the it's a pop-up store, but you know, probably the most prestigious shoe brand in France has opened up a store specifically. I mean, it's a pop-up still, but specifically related to that and to the circular economy, clearly in action on the most prestigious shopping street or one of them in the world.
So this is one of the initiatives we do to kind of close the ecosystem. Another thing that we are doing, and we have a great collaboration with, is Positive Luxury. So we are working with Positive Luxury, who you may know creates a butterfly mark for brands that are sustainably respectable.
Yes, good.
And we're going through a process with them to make sure that we tick all the boxes in terms of course, manufacturing and supply chain, but also that we, with respect, work in an ethical way, and that is part of the culture that we are developing.
Where do you your raw materials, your leather, your canvas? Those are your. Where do they come
all,
from?
All our products are made in Italy.
We work
with some fabulous. Very often small family craftsmen in Italy that the brand has been working with for more than 50 years. So at this point, everything is manufactured in Italy.
Okay, so it's high quality manufacturing. You have a very, you know exactly where it's made. And where the raw materials come from.
Correct.
Yeah. Would you start to tag that in the future as part of the, you know?
Well, that's the second project that we're working on.
Okay,
so we are a pilot brand with a new digital platform called True Twins. So it's really a digital twin to your physical product.
Oh, wow.
So we are testing it at the moment and tagging some of our bags with a device. And you can, with that device, follow the whole ecosystem and the path of a product when it's sold to the end consumer. As well as potentially resold, the new consumer will take over the whole history of the product, including the manufacturing, etc., in that device. So it gives you, first of all, like a great tool for counterfeiting, as well as for the history of the product.
Okay. And that would be built into the bag somehow, or into your bags? Or?
Correct.
Interior some way, so it would be
or through a serial number or some kind of identification that is linked to blockchain.
Linked to blockchain. So
it's
then
a blockchain platform that we are using.
So there's a kind of digital code within the product
then. Correct.
So
we're testing different means to make sure that we are preparing ourselves as well as possible to be able to, first of all, act in a fully responsible way, and secondly, to follow the product's path throughout its ecosystem.
Where is your creative team based? In New York?
Yeah.
Where in New York?
Upper East. Okay. Our headquarters on 65th and Lexington.
Okay. And you will keep that creativity, you think, based in New York, to keep an American quotient to the brand.
I think that's important, but equally important is it to work with and inviting either artists in residence or designers in, as we're doing for the men's launch. So we are open to work also with international designers, but great to see that people that we're talking to all are so fascinated about the DNA and unique history of Mark Cross and tapping into that and looking at how to then work with it for the future.
Okay, very good. Finally, I mean, we're also trying to address the generation. If what would be your advice to anyone thinking of taking a career in fashion or luxury management or some element in the management area of that sector?
I think a bit as we discussed at the beginning is, if you, especially when you come from the business side and the management part of the side, if you are interested in pure management, but also in connecting with that creative spirit that we find in the luxury goods world, where constant innovation is necessary, a very deep understanding of the consumer. I think that's key, to have a natural interest for that. You know, how is the consumer acting? What are they looking for? How has the buying pattern of a consumer changed radically over the past 5-10 years? And what will it be in the future? If you are interested in these different elements, then why not have a great, successful and passionate, it's all about passion, isn't it, career within the luxury goods segment.
It's to go back what you said in the beginning, it's about emotion. It's, you know, at the end of the day, you have to feel that some sort of connection with any brand that you either buy or you work in, no?
Absolutely. There's this connection you have emotionally that is key to understand your consumer and also to put the right products out to them.
Finally, define the DNA of this great brand, Mark Cross.
American heritage with a width of lifestyle, so an opportunity to go into many different product categories. I think being American sets us apart from, for example, European luxury good brands. And I think in our DNA, there's this sophisticated, casual way that Americans has about them, in the way they dress, in the way they live, that somehow is very different from a sensibility from an Italian or a French or a British luxury brand. And I think that American casual sophistication is very relevant to the world, not only Europeans, but also a consumer in Asia.
I agree with you, but what differentiate the American from the European? They're not so casual. It's a little bit more what?
I think the Americans somehow are more casual. Yeah. I mean, I always have this image of JF Kennedy,
yeah,
or JF Kennedy Jr., who will be, you know, on a boat, on a yacht, uh-huh, with white sailing shoes and then blue socks khaki and a big oversized sweater.
Yeah.
There's that casual chicness with a strong quality element that I think the Americans have.
Ulrich Gardeau, it's been great talking to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.